Du lytter til Hestedølærerne. Podcasten for dig, der er dølæge eller veterinærsygeplejerske og arbejder med heste. Mit navn er Emma Thomsen. Jeg er dølæge og arbejder som konsulent for Børinger Ingelheim. I Hestedølærerne taler vi om tilstanden og sygdommen, der kan ramme heste, men vi tager også andre emner op, som er relevante for dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Denne podcast er lavet af Børinger Ingelheim, og med denne podcast ønsker vi at give noget tilbage til dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Vi ønsker at tage emner op, som er interessante og relevante for dig, og hvis du har forslag til emner, du gerne vil høre mere om, eller tips til en gæst, du gerne vil høre, så tøv ikke med at kontakte os. Mine kontaktoplysninger finder du i podcastens beskrivelse.
Today we are honored to have a very special guest with us from Germany and the University of Leipzig, and it is Dr. Ingrid Verfuert, who is with us today to talk about clinical nutrition, and she will be doing so in a couple of episodes with a couple of different themes. Welcome, Ingrid, to the podcast.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure that we talk about nutrition, equine nutrition. So I'm a senior scientist, and I'm working in the Institute of Animal Nutrition in Germany at the Faculty of Veterinary Medicine in Leipzig. I do some research mainly related to equine nutrition, but I also do a lot of other things, for example, teaching, and I also do a lot of feeding advices, especially to horse owners or even to veterinarians. So that is my main job, what I have to do or what I like to do.
But you are a veterinarian from start, right?
Yes, I'm a veterinarian. I studied veterinary medicine in Berlin, and then I was in practice for at least 2 years, and then I decided to go back to university, and I did my doctoral degree, and I also did my habilitation, which is a little bit different to the other countries. It is a little bit more than the PhD, but finally it is to get the permission to do teaching. And then I did most of my habilitation in Hanover, and in 2006 I went over to Leipzig, and here I'm a senior scientist. And yeah, maybe it's very unusual that you are a veterinarian and involved in equine nutrition, but yeah, it's a good challenge to be involved in equine nutrition as a veterinarian, because I think it's a very good combination. You know at least a lot about internal medicine, and you have a good combination about the knowledge about internal diseases, and combine it with nutrition. Yeah.
I'm very happy for this combination, because I also think it's a perfect combination to bring the knowledge from both areas, so to say. Have you always been interested in nutrition? Did you already know at start that you wanted to work with this, or how did it sort of develop?
Actually, yes, because when I was at university, we had a very good teacher. It was Professor Campos. Probably some of you may know him. He's not really interested in horses, but he is a very good teacher, very good lecturer. And I felt really interested in animal nutrition. And I was always interested in the horse, so because I worked a lot on a stud farm. And I think it was a very interesting combination to have both, to have nutrition and the horse. So actually, yes.
That's good. It's a very special topic, but it's as I said, it's a great combination. So we wanted to talk to you about clinical nutrition, and also a little bit nutrition in general. And of course, what most people might think when they think of clinical nutrition in equines are, of course, the EMS patients and the EGUS patients, because those are mainly what you encounter when you have nutritional issues, so to say, or those are the ones causing nutritional issues mainly. But we wanted to dedicate these episodes to other topics, because we think, even though we know that you are an expert also in feeding EGUS and EMS patients, we thought that there is quite a bit of knowledge out there already. So we wanted to talk to you about a little bit more special topics and maybe bring some information that is not always very readily available for our practitioners out there. And in this first episode, we want to dedicate to the older horse or the elderly horse and all the issues that can encounter these horses, and also how to tackle them nutritionally. So the first question I want to ask you is, apart from all the health issues that can occur in the elderly horse, are there any specific concerns that needs to be addressed when it comes to nutrition in a healthy elderly horse just because it is old?
I think it's a very good question, because first we have to ask ourselves, when is a horse old? And do we have the healthy old horse? And of course, we have horses or old horses with health issues. So first, I think we have to discuss a little bit when is a horse old? And it's a little bit different within Europe. For example, in UK, they claim a horse already old when it's over 15 years old. When we look to other European country or the US, we mostly say a horse will be old over 20 years old. So there is a little bit of debate, and there are some arguments to say, okay, already over 15 years the horse might getting older, but there are also some arguments that over 20 years the horse getting older. So it might be changes in digestion, changes in immune response, etc. But at least in Germany, we prefer to claim a horse when it's over 20 years old. And but it doesn't matter. So, and it's very important to say that nowadays we have horses, let's say 23, 24, they are completely healthy and then can be used still in performance, etc. So that is very important to note, so that we have the healthy alls, and maybe we don't have special issues, health issues, but it is very important to have a very close recording to these horses. For example, for me, it's always very important to look at the body condition score. Is there a decrease in body weight or are changes? And not just the body condition score, the Crestin neck score, but also the body weight. For me, it's much more important to use the body weight, because if the horse will lose each year, let's say 20 or about 30 kilograms, so you may not see it with the body condition score, but you see it with the body weight. So that is very important. I always recommend that horses over 20 years old, but also younger horses, to be honest, should be scaled on a regular basis. I always recommend to do it in spring, because that is represents the winter period. I also recommend it after the pasture period, let's say in fall, and then you can see slight changes in body weight or slight changes in the haircut, etc. And you should really realize it. Is everything okay? Is it the same like the last year, or are there any changes? At least in body weight, we can really see it. And of course, changes in the haircut or in the in the way how you can ride the horse, etc., behavior changes. But from the point of nutrition, it's quite important to monitor the body weight. And when we have a healthy old horse, honestly, there are no specific needs. So you can do it like feeding sufficient amounts of forage. Maybe you could put much more emphasis on the forage quality, but again, I think it's also a big issue in younger horses. Maybe you add some extra energy during winter time to manage a good body weight condition. But honestly, there are no big differences in comparison to younger horses. A very good management. Maybe a little bit extra energy. But for example, there is no specific need to put more minerals or more vitamins than the typical recommendation. So it's more a very good monitoring and maybe some extra energy. If it's not an obese horse, because we have also obese old horses, so of course then extra energy is not really necessary, but to maintain the horse in a very good body condition shape.
So if I can ask a question, Ingrid, as well. So that means that there should be no excuse for an elderly, healthy horse to have a poor body condition score then.
Actually, for a healthy aged horse, there's no excuse. I think one important point is that the forage quality is getting really bad in the last 2, 3 years. And so we have, when we use two table values and what might be the nutrients in typical hay qualities. So I think in many ways they are overestimated. So because we have a drop in protein levels in a lot of meadow hays and in also in the energy levels. So for me it's very important to check the forage quality, because this is sometimes the big issue, that the forage quality is bad and therefore old horses lose body weight. But we have the same situation also in younger horses because of the poor hay quality. So if the horse is still able to consume sufficient amounts of forage, let's say 2% of body weight, and it's really able to chew and to digest, and we can add some, let's say, some oats and let's say oils and some minerals. So there's actually no excuse for a decrease in body weight. It's more to check the forage quality. That is my personal opinion of what I can see in practice.
Yes, and I agree. We sometimes come across owners that will use the age as an argument for why they cannot keep the weight on their horse. And for the veterinarians, I think the message from you is that age on its own is not a reason for having a poor body condition score. You have to talk to the owner about that. And because if you have a young horse, they would understand that that would not be normal. But as they age, you would say, oh, it's also because it is all getting old, so the body condition score might not be as good. But now you say that's not a valid excuse. If the horse is otherwise healthy and kept well, with a good forage quality, then it should have a proper body condition score, I guess.
Yes, I can definitely support this opinion. Another point, what I sometimes hear is that the people say, I want to have a little bit a lower body weight condition, because I'm afraid of laminitis. So, and therefore I would like to have a very lean horse. So, and that is also not an argument, because we would like to have a optimal body weight body condition score, and at least I personally prefer to have the horse slightly obese when it goes into the winter time, because then it's a little bit more typical that the old horse will lose at least a little bit of body weight, and then it starts again in the spring. So it's probably not, when we look to the body condition score on the scale, when we have a scoring system from 1 to 9, so the optimal body weight will be between 3 and 4, and I prefer a little bit in aged horses to have it a little bit higher, let's say between 4 and 5, at least in winter time, or when it start to get into the winter feeding.
So 4 and 5 out of 9, so the Hennecke score, yeah, that is I think the least that you could require, I guess. So we're still with the healthy older horse, and what we can conclude is that then they will not require any specific feeding except for keeping their weight on, and it's important to monitor their body weight. What about all these feeds and feed supplements that says senior? What is actually senior about them then? We're still with the healthy horse, but what does it mean? And is the are these feeds something that could be beneficial for a healthy older horse?
honestly, I think it's a big point for being commercial or to provide commercial products. I always recommend to compare, let's say, a typical complementary feed for, I don't know, sport horses or whatever, and compare it to a senior muesli. And sometimes it's claimed, oh, much more energy and higher trace elements, whatever. So, but when you compare it with a good complementary feed for younger horses, there are no differences at all. And therefore, for me personally, I think it's a kind of marketing strategy to address the senior horse. But if you look to the nutrients, at least in most of the products, there are no big differences. So I don't care. It's also possible to use a typical complementary feed. I mean, you have to decide, would you like to feed a more starchy complementary feed or a starch-free complementary feed? So that is maybe a more general decision, or to have a higher protein level in the concentrate, or a lower protein level. And as far, or as I already said, the forage quality are sometimes very poor with a very low protein level, so I always recommend to have a little bit higher or much more protein in the complementary feed, or to add a extra protein source. But actually, all the senior claiming is, for me personally, more a strategy from the feed companies.
So some feed companies for, I think, other animals would claim something about that they have prepared the feed in a certain way to increase digestibility. Is that something that's happening in this, in these so-called senior feeds? Is that worth anything, or what's your opinion on this?
I mean, of course, I think there will be some thermal treatment of the grains, but you have this kind of thermal treatment, for example, also in complementary feed for younger horses, because at least grain, we recommend, for example, to have corn flakes or barley flakes to improve starch digestion also in younger horses. So that is not really a point for the senior horse, because a lot of complementary feeds have a good or very high digestibility. So it's more maybe the decision, would you like to feed a pellet? Because in a pellet, the thermal treatment is a little bit lower, and therefore, at least for the grains, the starch digestibility might be lower. But if you use a muesli or which contain flaked grains or also flaked legumes like pea flakes, for example, it's pretty the same for young horses and even for old horses. So that is not for me really a big point, because we have this kind of complementary feeds with a high digestibility already in for performance horses at or lactating mares or whatever. So that is not really a big issue, or it's not a big differences for young horses or senior horses.
That's actually a good point, the varying types of feed. When you talk about the senior horse that is healthy, but we do know that they lose some chewing ability because of the teeth and so on. Is that something that you think about when you give advice, whether you recommend pelleted feed versus whole grain versus muesli, all these various types? What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, if a healthy horse shouldn't have any problems with the shoeing activity, so because it's the claiming of healthy. But if we start to talk a little bit more about teeth problems, which is a big issue in the old horse, then in most cases the soaking of the feed is of much higher value than deciding or have a pellet, because a pellet, sometimes horses have a problem to chew a pellet, but it's also easy to soak a pellet. It's also easy to soak a muesli. So for me, it's more if horse is not able to chew in a proper way, then soaking, it's not just the concentrate or the supplements which should be soaked. It's also that we have to exchange meadow hay by hay cubes, etc. And I think then soaking is much better, or high, it's of more value than have a because Yeah, I don't see the point because when I look to the senior muesli, it looks pretty the same when I look to a muesli for a performing horse or a lactating mare. So sometimes what I decide is if the horse owners want to have a very simple ration, that can happen, but most horse owners want to have a more complicated ration. But if you want to have a very simple ration, I always recommend to use a complementary feed for lactating mares because this has a high protein level, this has a high energy level, and nowadays we have at least one company that provide normally the complementary feed for lactating mares or for mares. They contain high amounts of grains, and the digestibility of the grains is very high because they use flaking or steaming or whatever. But there's one company, at least in Germany, they also provide for mares starch reduced complementary feed. So if there are some health issues like insulin dysregulation, but you have a lean old horse, you can, for example, use these grain-free complementary feeds. And if it's labeled for mares, in many cases the protein level is much higher. But we have also for performance horses high protein levels because there's, I mean, we have a huge amounts of products. Just look a little bit or check the labeling. What is the protein level? I personally recommend it to have a little bit higher than 12% of crude protein and look to the energy level. And then look, do you want to have some grains? And normally in a muesli, the grains are highly processed. Or do you want to have a grain-free complementary feed? I think that is more the choice. And if there are any chewing problems, you can soak it.
So we can slide into that one because that was the next topic. What do we do with the elderly horse, with the typical health issues? And then, of course, dental issues is one of them. And one challenge that I think that many horse owners have is that when the teeth are getting worse or getting more worn down, there are issues with keeping them in good condition because, of course, the less they eat, the more they will lose weight and so on. And this can sometimes be a challenge. So, what's your best tip for feeding a horse with dental issues to keep it in good condition?
Yeah, that's the point that we have to exchange the forage by grass pellets, by hay cubes, which can be soaked. That is the main strategy. The point is that people think they can use, let's say, 2 or 3 kilograms of hay cubes, which are soaked. If we have to consider a sufficient energy intake, we have to exchange 1 kilogram meadow hay by 1 kilogram hay cubes or 1 kilogram grass cubes, and it's always based on the dry matter. And so then, after okay, it's an exchange from 1 kilogram to 1 kilogram, which means if the horse needs, let's say, 12 kilogram of a meadow hay, you have to ex maybe the horse will still consume, let's say, 2 kilogram of the meadow hay. So you have to exchange 10 kilogram meadow hay by 10 kilogram hay cubes, and then you have to soak the hay cubes. So you have a big volume of feed, and that is the next problem. You have to divide it into smaller portions because if you just have a feeding frequency, let's say 1 or 2 times a day, so it's a very big volume. So most of the horses will not really like to eat these big amounts, so you have to provide it into several smaller meals. So it is very expensive, the exchange. It's time consuming because you have to soak the hay cubes or the grass pellet, and you have or you need the possibility to have to feed the horse with several small meals. So you have to consider that. And that is, I think, one of the main reasons why we find a lot of very lean horses, because people are not able, maybe they are able to pay for the costs, but the small meal size is also a big issue in big riding stables, because most horses will be fed, let's say, 2 or 3 times a day. But if you feed such large amounts of feed, you have to spread it over, let's say, 4 to 5 meals over the day, and that is a big challenge.
Yeah. What about hay cubes and these two types of feeds? I mean, often they are quite low in energy, or they are actually reflecting meadow hay, which is usually a bit lower than other concentrate typically. I know that lucerne pellets is also a popular alternative to giving hay, but which, if you would recommend any sort of split between, let's say, low energy hay cubes, higher energy protein lucerne, can you give too much of lucerne, for example? Or could I just replace the full forage ration with lucerne pellets?
Yes, if the horse just consumes the lucerne pellets, you should do it, because we have a lot of problems with the palatability of the hay cubes. But one main problem with the lucerne pellets is that the calcium level might be very high in the lucerne pellets, so there is a really high calcium intake. So let's say for 600 kilogram body weight horse, the calcium requirement is around 20 to 25 gram per day. So when you add 10 kilogram of lucerne pellets into the diet, you may have a calcium intake more than 100 gram of calcium, and that may cause problems with bladder stones, or what we say, that the urine, there's a lot of calcium carbonates, calcium crystals, and that may cause some problems. So therefore, I don't really recommend to replace hay cubes to 100% by lucerne pellets, but at least to make it a little bit more practical, you have a 600 kilogram horse. I always recommend 1 up to 2 or 3 kilograms of lucerne pellets, because of the high protein quality. The energy level is a little bit higher. So you have, let's say 2 kilogram of lucerne pellets. And I also recommend, what we say, corn cubes. So that is a whole maize plant. It's the stem and also the kernels, so the corn. And because a lot of horses prefer the corn cubes, we have in Germany one company, they sell the corn cubes, and they are quite palatable, and that is a good mixture to have the hay cubes combined with the lucerne pellets and the corn cubes, because the corn cubes has a very low calcium level, but they horses, or at least a lot of aged horses, like to consume the corn cubes. Therefore, have always a kind of mixture, let's say 3 4 kilogram of hay cubes, 2 3 kilograms of lucerne pellets, and 2 or up to 4 kilograms of the corn cubes. So that's a good mixture, and most of the aged horses like to consume this kind of mixture.
And Ingrid, what do you think? I think fat is one of those things that can assist in keeping calories on a horse that's not chewing as well. So what are your thoughts on what fat sources should we use for these horses? Do you have any preferences, and what how high of a volume can we get away with?
Actually, when you just look to the energy density, it doesn't matter which kind of oil. So you can use sunflower oil, you can use corn oil, whatever. So from the point of energy density, there are really l very small differences between the different oil types. When we look to the relationship of omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acids, we also prefer to use at least small amounts of, for example, linseed oil, because of the high levels of omega-3 fatty acids. We also have some data that the omega-3 fatty acid may have a positive impact on the immune function and on inflammation. So if the horses really like to consume linseed oil, I provide at least 60 to 90 milliliter. We always talk about 600 kilogram body weight horse, up to 90 or up to 100 milliliter of linseed oil. And then you can put an extra amount of, let's say, corn oil. And I also use around 100 milliliters. So in total, you have 200 milliliters of oil. But honestly, we have to make sure what we replace, because 200 milliliter means an energy density which is less than 1 kilogram of oats. So we say 300 milliliters of oils will replace the energy level of 1 kilogram of oats. We must make sure what we are talking about. However, personally, I am a person who is much more restricted with the oil intake, because I have always, or I'm always a little bit afraid, because when you use 200 milliliters of oil per day, that means you have to spread it over into several meals. And I always see some ratio, they add 100 milliliter in the morning and 100 milliliter in the evening. We must imagine that, of course, the horse is really able to digest oils. But the bile acids, they flow into the small intestine in very small amounts over the whole day, because the horses do not have a bile bladder, so they are not really able to consume large amounts within one meal, and therefore it's very important to spread it over into smaller portions. And I have still the feeling, from at least in Germany, that most of the horse owners are not able to provide the daily ration over 5 to 6 meals. Maybe they can provide it in 2 or even 3 meals. And then I stay always around, let's say, a maximum of 50 milliliter per meal. So if you have 3 meals, it means 150 milliliter. So that means you can replace 0.5 kilogram of oats according to the energy level. So of course I add oil, but it's sometimes a little bit over, or they say, okay, I add 100 milliliter of oil, that is really a big amount of energy. That's not true. And when we look to literature, a maximum of oil intake is recommended up to 1 milliliter per 1 kilogram body weight, which means 600 milliliter in a 600 kilogram body weight horse. But I have never recommended in my whole career, because I have always, or we know that when you add huge amounts of oil into the diet, that at least some of the oil will flow into the large intestine, and therefore they disturb the microflora, and also the microflora is quite important for the horse to produce energy. So I'm in between a little bit with the amounts of oil.
Yeah, so you should select the horses that you administer large volume of oil. You have to be careful and select them individually. Yeah. Very good. Are there any other things that we need to consider when it comes to feeding horses with dental issues? We've been talking about soaking, providing many meals per day, dividing them, and also having a good balance between sources of feed. Is there anything else we need to consider?
Yeah, I think we always forget a little bit the pectins. Because the pectins, so they are, for example, in the sugar beet pulp. It is very old and very traditional feedstuff, but when you look to the energy value, it's quite comparable to oats. And but the main point is that the pectins are mainly fermented not in the small intestine, they are fermented in the large intestine. So it's a good combination. They provide energy for the microflora, but the microflora produce substances which can be used as energy substances by the horse. So for me, the sugar beet pulp is a very interesting feedstuff. And at least in Germany, we have a lot of companies who provide sugar beet pulp, but you have also in Denmark and in other European countries the possibility to add sugar beet pulp to the diet. And so and many horses prefer, or they they like to consume sugar beet pulp. Of course, they have to be soaked. That's for sure. But that is also for me a very interesting energy source. And if the horse owner says, okay, my horse likes sugar beet pulp, then I always recommend also to add sugar beet pulp. I personally add a maximum of 1 kilogram sugar beet pulp, always based on the dry matter. Because I, from my practical experience, when you go over 1 kilogram sugar beet pulp, then some horses refuse the intake. So therefore that is my recommendation. Mainly I start with 200, 300 gram of sugar beet pulp, in a kind of adaptation period. And then I go up to, yeah, let's say 1 kilogram after 1 or 2 weeks. So that's for me also very good, interesting, energy source.
So, we've been talking about weight loss and the other topics, but weight loss also without dental issues is, of course, an issue that can occur in the elderly horse. We've been talking about energy and how to supplement with energy if there's lack. But what about muscle atrophy when they lose muscle, maybe due to that they can't be in the same amount of exercise anymore, or because of they're just getting too little feed. What's the strategy here to increase muscle mass or to at least help increase muscle mass?
I mean, the main point is that you should add extra protein into the diet, and therefore, again, the lucerne is a very interesting feedstock because the amino acid profile is quite good. So we have to, or when we have really a big problem with muscle mass losses, I always recommend to have either the labeling of the hay cubes that I know that is the protein level. So normally it is provided by labeling. If the horse still consume some meadow hay, then it's also very important to have the crude protein in the meadow hay. So I know that is roughly the protein intake. And normally when there are significant body weight losses or muscle losses, I always add much more protein than the requirement. We don't have really good data, but sometimes I'm more than the double of the requirement. And I also try to have a combination of different protein sources. I really recommend to use the alfalfa, but we have also the soybean. I mean, it's also very good protein source, but we can discuss, is it really good recommendation with respect to the climate changes? So soybean, yeah, we can discuss it. I also think that the pea protein, the pea flakes, is also very interesting protein source. At least we have the possibility in Germany. We have a company that provide pea flakes. So because in the pea flake or in the pea, we have a beside the lysine, we have also the leucine as an amino acid, which is well known to have a positive effect on muscle building in elderly humans. So from these data, maybe we can adapt it to the horse. And we have the pea flake. Also the lupine is also an interesting protein source. So for me, it's always we should combine different things. And and if I always try to get at least some pea flakes into the diet.
That's very good advice to focus on maybe changing up our view on protein sources, in fact. So, can you just repeat for the listeners, what would you consider being a low percentage of protein and a medium percentage protein and a high percentage, just so we understand more about how to evaluate the different feedstuffs? Where are your borders or?
When we look to the forage, so crude protein level below 7% is a low protein meadow hay. Meadow hay around, let's say 8 to 10% is in the middle, and a high protein level will be around 12 or even higher. So
Okay.
that's for example, when we look to the Lucerne, in the Lucerne, the protein level is always a little bit higher than 12%. And when we look to complementary feed, a lot of the complementary feed have protein levels up to 18%, especially in those for example, lactating mares, etc. But we have also some other complementary feed around, 60 to 80%. So that will be a high protein level, and we use this more as a supplementary feed to add extra protein.
What is your opinion on potato protein as a source? Because it's a very common protein source for mixed feeds in the Nordic countries.
The potato protein is also a very interesting protein source because the amino acid level is very good. It comes very close to the soybean protein quality and even a little bit higher. So from that perspective, it's interesting to add potato protein into supplementary feed. Sometimes I got the response from the horse owners that the palatability is probably not that high as, for example, for the Lucerne or even for the lupine, because the lupine is, for me, a very interesting protein source because the lupine also contains high amount of fat. So, and the combination of protein and fat increases the palatability. And that is a little bit different for the potato protein, but I think a small amount, like say, up to 10% in a complementary feed, I think it will be well accepted. But sometimes I got the response that the palatability is not that high, and therefore the horse owner do not really prefer the potato protein. But from the way of the amino acid profile, it's a very good protein source.
I think we can move on to if there are any specific concerns when horses are diagnosed with certain diseases. For instance, do you have anything that owners should be extra aware of when feeding PPID horses? Apart from all the good advice that we've heard until now, are there any specific recommendations that you would advise when you have a diagnosed PPID horse?
I think for the PPID horses, it's quite important to know if there is also insulin dysregulation, because then the recommendation will be somewhat different. If you have a PPID horse, which is perfectly under the medication of Pergolide, let's say Prasent, and there's no issue about laminitis and the insulin, at least the resting insulin is okay, then yes, of course, we recommend a complementary feed which is reduced in starch. But honestly, if there's no insulin dysregulation and a good medication, so I have some problems to understand why we should reduce the starch level, because it's not an issue. But of course, I know that's a lot of debate, and therefore I recommend, of course, also a grain-free complementary feed to increase the energy intake. That is the one point. And a lot of the PPID horses, they lose a lot of muscle, and therefore it's also recommended to have a very high protein intake. Again, we don't know really is it more than twice of the recommendation, but I'm very close to twice of the recommendation. And again, I add protein sources like alfalfa, Lucerne, or soybean or whatever. So a high protein intake is really recommended. And then we have also some data that horses who suffer from PPID, that's the immune response, might be a little bit different, and therefore I recommend to add omega-3 fatty acids into the diet, like linseed oil or other omega-3 fatty acid sources. And I also, because of the interaction with the immune system, I also add some extra vitamin E into the diet to improve the immune function. And especially in these horses, I use a single vitamin E source to have a high vitamin intake. From the recommendation, it is up to 2 milligram vitamin E per kilogram body weight. But in horses who suffer from PPID, I recommend up to 3 milligram vitamin E per kilogram body weight. And so that is so that is what I recommend. I mean, we don't have too many data about the proper feeding management, but I look to the problems in the horse, and then I make my decision which kind of nutrients are necessary. But that is roughly how I feed a horse with PPID. And another important point is, and therefore I do not understand the recommendation to reduce starch, because a lot of the PPID horses, which are under very good medication, like pegylated, like Presant, for example, they can have access to pasture. If they are not prone to laminitis. So, and it's for me very important to put the aged horses on pasture, and also the PPID horses when they are under good medication. There are no the insulin is okay, and no signs of laminitis. And then in the pasture grass, you have a high, huge amounts of sugars, and a lot of the PPID horses, they compensated very, very well, and therefore I have a little bit of problem to reduce the starch intake. But I know it is a general debate, and therefore I follow the general debate. But honestly, I'm not quite sure if it's really necessary. Yes.
Fair enough.
I think, don't you think that it comes out of a bit of that you want to be cautious if you're not sure about the insulin status, but and then you want to sort of be on the safe side and lower the sugar and starch content, but the more accurate thing to do would to actually be aware of the insulin status, so do the insulin testing and see how careful do I actually have to be. We have an episode also with Andy Durham when we discussed PPID and insulin dysregulation in general. We discussed also this feeding issue, and he was definitely on that line as well. It's the insulin status that determines sort of how careful you have to be with the sugar and starch. And if the insulin is fine, then
That is
sugar and
also when the
starch.
horse owner asked me, can I put the horse on the pasture? I always say, let's check the insulin status. And if the insulin status is okay, and I personally prefer not just the resting insulin value, I also prefer the challenge, because that is what the horses will experience on the pasture. And if if you do a sugar test, for example, and the insulin response is okay, and the horse is under a good medication, that is for me very often a big point, because a lot of horse owners, they reduce the dosage because they are afraid, or it's also the cost, whatever. And we have a lot, at least in Germany, they claim that it's not necessary to put the horses on pegylated, and so, and then of course the horses are at risk. But if they are on a good medical treatment and the insulin response is okay, then you can do a slow adaptation to pasture, and a lot of horses really have a lot of benefits to be on a pasture. And then, of course, it makes no sense to feed a starch-reduced complementary feed, because the sugar amount on pasture are much, much higher. Yeah, but it depends on the diagnosis. That's correct. Yeah.
And then we also have to remember that the PPID is also a dynamic situation, so we cannot expect that you diagnose a horse with a certain level of PPID that requires a certain amount of pergolide just staying static for the rest of its life. So that's why it's important to keep controlling and checking the ACTH levels, but also the insulin levels, because that can change as well. It might be that you have a horse tested negative for insulin dysregulation 1 year, but then 2 years down the road, something is happening in that horse with a disease, and then all of a sudden it becomes insulin dysregulated. So having the controls on a regular basis would be a good idea.
Yeah, that's a
So.
very good point. I always recommend before, for every year before pasturing, or the horse should go on the pasture, I always recommend do first the testing every year. And then if it's still okay, then you can take the decision, put it on the pasture or not. Yeah, I definitely, that's correct. Yeah.
Do you have any other conditions that you think is important for us to touch upon with the elder horse?
What I recommend is to do a check blood testing every year to check the liver metabolism and to check the kidney metabolism, because maybe it's because I do a lot of ration formulation. I have at least some horses with kidney diseases, although it's not very specific for the age, but I recommend to test the liver metabolism, etc., and also the ACTH value, and sometimes also the insulin, the resting insulin, to get a good idea of what's going on in the horse. So that is for me also very important information that there should be a very close monitoring of the age horse.
Yes. So that would be for horses that you feel that you have feeding under control, everything seems to be perfectly aligned, but controlling the blood tests, because if you start seeing issues with weight and so on, it could be that some organ dysfunction with age is developing, and that would, so your feeding is not off, it's because the horse is developing issues with the organs due to old age. That's also something that we see
I
from
mean, if
yeah.
the horse owner are willing to pay a little bit more, I recommend it to do it in after the pasture period and again before the next pasture period. So then you have a very close monitoring, not just once a year. So to do it, if there's a significant change in the feeding issue, and some people do, and some people are not aware of,
All right. Thank you so much, Ingrid, for that very informative talk on nutritional considerations when it comes to the older horse, the senior horse. In the next episode, we will be discussing minerals, vitamins, and electrolytes, which I think is going to be a very interesting talk. So stay tuned for that.
Tak fordi du lyttede med til Hestedyrlærerne. Hvis du kan lide det, du hører, så læg en anmeldelse i din podcast-app, og glem ikke at fortælle dine kolleger om podcasten. Vi er snart tilbage med et nyt spændende afsnit af Hestedyrlærerne.